I'll read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 14, Ideal Family Life. Text 14. Translation of purport by his divinity, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Singan Bhagavato Vikshnan Avatara Katam Ratam Shradhano Yata Kalam Upashanta Janarvata Satsangat Chanakai Sangam Atmajayat Majadishu Vimuchan Muchamanishu Svayam Svapnavad Uttita. This is Narada Muni is speaking to Maharaj Yudhisthira. A Grihastha must associate again and again with saintly persons, and with great respect he must hear the nectar of the activities of the Supreme Lord and His incarnation, as these activities are described in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Puranas. Thus one should gradually become detached from affection for his wife and children, exactly like a man awakening from a dream. The Krishna consciousness movement has been established to give Grihasthas all over the world an opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita specifically. The process, as described in many ways, is one of hearing and chanting Srinivatam, Prakata, Krishna, Punya, Shravana, Kirtana. Everyone, especially the Grihasthas, who are mudhadi, ignorant about the goal of life, should be given opportunities to hear about Krishna. This phrase, mudhadi, was used by Yudhisthira at the beginning of the talk. Griha mudhadi, he said, describing himself as one who is in household life and unaware of the goal of life. So he was being repeated. And actually, at the end of his teaching, Prabhupada uses the word again to say that actually, even if he considers himself a Griha Mudhadi, a person entangled in household life, he can change that even while remaining at home by the process that are recommended here. Simply by hearing, by attending lectures in the different centers of the Krishna consciousness movement, where topics of Krishna from Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are discussed, they will be purified of their sinful inclination for constant indulgence in illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling, which have become prominent in modern days. Thus they can be raised to the status of light, punya, shravana, kirtana, simply by joining the kirtan, Hare
Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
And by hearing about Krishna from Bhagavad Gita, one must be purified, especially if he also takes prasad. This is all going on in the Krishna consciousness movement. So far in the purport, he seems to be describing especially the preaching program, reaching out to the materialistic non-devotee householders who are doing all these sinful activities. But if they just come, starting with our Sunday programs, or any program held by the Krishna consciousness movement, then they can do these things, chant, hear from the Shastras, and take prasadam. To do these things, they don't have to give up their occupational situation. But now, as we read on, it's not just to preach to the non-devotee householders, but Krishna conscious members also have to continue to pursue these positive things. Another specific description here is Srinivan Bhagavato Vikshnam Avatara Katamitam. It is not that because one has finished Bhagavad Gita, he should not hear it again. The word avikshnam is very important. We should hear again and again. There is no question of stopping. Even if one has read these topics many times, he should go on reading again and again, because Bhagavad Gita, the words spoken by Krishna, and spoken by Krishna's devotees about Krishna, are amritam, nectar. The more one drinks this amritam, the more he advances in his eternal life. So the instruction to go on hearing, read the book, and read the book again, it's not some dogmatic idea, or like the some of the anti-cult critics of Krishna conscious movement, they think that we're really damaging our creativity and limiting ourselves in some under some unreasonable order. You have to read again, read again, read again. Why? Nobody knows, except that you have to keep drilling yourself in this information. Put yourself in a brainwashed state or something. No. The reason is that it's nectar, and it gets better and better. And actually, it's not like reading the same thing, because new meanings can be revealed to you as you approach it in a better state. So at least we should understand that these are a special kind of literature, a special kind of literature which is meant for repeated hearing, whereas other literature really can't stand up to that. The human form of life is meant for liberation, but unfortunately, due to the influence of Kali Yuga, every day the grihasthas are working hard like asses. Early in the morning they rise and travel, even 100 miles away, to earn bread. Especially in the Western countries, I have seen that people awaken at 5 o'clock to go to offices and factories to earn their livelihood. People in Calcutta and Bombay also do this every day. They work very hard in the office or factory, and again they spend 3 or 4 hours in transportation returning home. Then they retire at 10 o'clock and again rise early in the morning to go to their offices and factories. This kind of hard labor is described in the Shastras as the life of pigs and stool eaters. Nayam deho deha bhajan nilopikastan kamam arhati vidujanye. Of all living entities who have accepted material bodies in this world, one who has been awarded this human form should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for dogs and hogs that eat stool. One must find some time for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. This is Vedic culture. One should work 8 hours at the most to earn his livelihood, and either in the afternoon or in the evening, a householder should associate with devotees to hear about the incarnations of Krishna and his activities, and thus be gradually liberated from the clutches of Maya. However, instead of finding time to hear about Krishna, the householders, after working hard in offices and factories, find time to go to a restaurant or a club where, instead of hearing about Krishna and his activities, they are very much pleased to hear about the political activities of demons and non-devotees, and to enjoy sex, wine, women, and meat, and in this way waste their time. This is not Grihastha life, but demoniac life. The Krishna consciousness movement, however, with its centers all over the world, gives such fallen and condemned persons an opportunity to hear about Krishna. So, Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namana Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharani Namaste Shasana. Narada advises that a person not work in such a way to earn his livelihood that he has no time or direction or energy to chant the holy names and to hear especially Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. So that is our success or our failure, whether we can do these things. And everyone has to find a way to do it that's your own decision and your own life. We have our free will. So human life is not to be spent without this regular hearing and chanting. Now, neither can we think that I've already had enough Krishna consciousness that I understand the goal of life. Even if I don't go on regularly hearing it, I will be able to still be a Krishna conscious person. No, that's not true. Unless we regularly hear about Krishna, we'll lose the taste for it, the practice, and we can again become covered over by Maya. Maya is very strong, and that's not finished with us, that necessarily we should think that in our there's no file left on us, it's completely destroyed. That's the liberated status. But when you're still practicing, Maya is, she's a little disappointed that this person is definitely out of my clutches. and is willing to, when we show ourselves fully Krishna conscious, she's willing then to be pleased, since she's also a devotee of the Lord, that we've gotten away from her. But in the meantime, she's a very good devotee, so she has to be very scrupulous whether this person has come to disturb Krishna or is actually a devotee. So she'll still try to get us. But if we're regularly chanting and hearing, then we will not be interested in Maya at all. So the sadhaka is one who's practicing devotional service, not just spontaneously, but knowing that material life is hellish without Krishna, and wanting to advance in Krishna consciousness, wanting to go back to Godhead. We have to regularly practice, even if we don't want to sometimes, and find how to do this on a daily basis. So Prabhupada has given us the minimum 16 rounds to chant. And if one lives in the temple, then he goes to a Bhagavatam class. But if we don't live in the temple, we have to have something equivalent to that, regular hearing, reading the scriptures. Here it says, yata kalam, according to time, he should be very faithful in hearing about the Lord, shrinvan bhagavato vikshanam. Always, he should hear about the Lord and his avatars, which is nectar, according to time. So it doesn't say that grihasthas, they must at 7 a.m. sharp here, or they must at 4 p.m. exactly. No, according to time. And Prabhupada has in the synonyms, in parentheses, generally a grihastha can find time in the evening or in the afternoon. This may seem a little odd to us, since we were always trained about the early morning hours, and that is the best time, is the early morning hours. It seems to be mentioned here because the grihastha, if he has to go to work, then he may make the plea that, I don't have any time in the morning. I get up and I have to go to work. I have to travel 3 or 4 hours to get to work. Well then, do you work until bedtime at night? No, I have some time off in the afternoon and the evening. So then that's why that's sort of all right. Then when your work is done, then at least you can do it then. But of course, then he says, no, I'm not fit to hear these topics. Then I have to let off some steam. I go to the pub, I go to the sit down in the living room and watch television and enjoy myself just to relax from the day's activities. Now that may be so, that he's so wound up by the materialistic activity for the day that he really is not fit, which brings up another point as to what kind of work we should do if it leaves us not at all in a state to find time every day to do that. That has to be considered very important part of your choice of occupation, that it will leave you time and composure to do that. Otherwise, what's the sense? In the very next verse, it brings up a point we've already heard. While working to earn his livelihood as much as necessary to maintain body and soul together, so that he should work and not overwork. And in the purport, which we can read and understand, especially in connection with keeping yourself fit to hear and chant daily, Prabhupada says, certainly one requires some means of livelihood, and according to one's varna and ashram, this means of livelihood is prescribed in the shastras. One should be satisfied with this. Therefore, instead of hankering for more and more money, a sincere devotee of the Lord tries to invent some ways to earn his livelihood, and when he does so, Krishna helps him. Earning one's livelihood, therefore, is not a problem. The real problem is how to get free from the bondage of birth, death, and old age. Attaining this freedom and not inventing unnecessary necessities is the basic principle of Vedic civilization. One should be satisfied with whatever means of life comes automatically. So the work that we do to earn money, it can't be our main passion, our main meditation. Someone was saying that there was some sales program, and the salesman said, if you want to be successful, you have to think of this product and sleep thinking of this product and eat this thinking of this product. So actually, they find this is many firms have taken this evangelistic or almost religious attitude for selling their profits. Very clever dovetailing of religion in the service of religious enthusiasm in the service of economic development. But then what about the real religion? If you're always chanting and thinking and becoming a devotee of and bowing down to the products or the job. So here it said that the work should be work as well as travel to and from work. It shouldn't be the all in all. So this is a problem for devotees in the Krishna conscious movement also, developing a taste or finding a time with either work duties or household duties, taking care of the family. And we have to be sympathetic about the actual problems people have. But the attitude, we should be positive, and that is not giving up and saying, I can't do it, but how to change the situation so that we start doing it. So we have to realize it's so important, because the whole human form of life is meant for understanding the self, becoming attracted to Krishna, and then at the time of death, because you're regularly thinking of Krishna, you go back to Krishna. So if we can miss that, then it's the greatest loss. So with the intelligence, we should be guided in that way. And if we do that based on intelligence and following the order of the spiritual master, then there will come a taste. And Krishna is speaking or about Krishna, there's the two kinds of Krishna katha, it will start to become the most important thing in our life, even more important than work and even more important than wife and family. And it's meant to be that way. It should be that way. The verse that we read says, by doing this, associating and with saintly persons and hearing the nectar, the result will be that you'll become detached, like a man awakening from a dream. So it's not only that in a little corner of the life, which is mainly dedicated to other things, we find some time, but eventually, even if it's less time than in the other things, it becomes very important to us, most important. And we start thinking about it at all times by meditating, even during our work and other activities, about everything in relation to Krishna. So we have the books and we have the japa. Actually, the japa should be done as far as possible in the morning. If you do have to go to work early, it's better to get up even earlier so that you don't just get up, take some hasty breakfast or no breakfast, and rush out. But you get up, and then in a cool state of mind, you chant Hare Krishna. It's a bit possible, Brahma Muhurta. If that's not possible, still, before you do your other activities. We all know that once the modes of nature, they seem to pick up during the day, just like the noise volume picks up, and our plan-making and scheming picks up. If there's any chance, the best time it is in the morning, although here it says if you can't do it, you can do it in the afternoon. But it should be a regular time. And it's not just a mechanical thing, the japa, that you agree to do it, and then so you just go through so many rounds, first round, second round. But you have to keep trying to improve the chanting. And that there's no end to that. Even at the end of his days, Haridas Thakur was chanting a prescribed number of rounds very, very earnestly. And he felt very sorry when, due to his oncoming departure from the body, he wasn't able to keep it up. He called it his disease. And Prabhupada comments, yes, this is a disease, not to be able to chant rounds. So it always has to be striving and always trying to improve. We're supposed to be chanting like a child crying for the mother. And actually, being very careful to hear the holy name and not think of other things. If they come in voluntarily, then you have to catch hold of yourself and start again to listen to the holy name and to call out to Krishna, to pray to Krishna, please engage me in your service, starting with this immediate best service or first service, to hear your holy name. Please let me understand the importance of chanting. Otherwise, either we stop chanting, if we don't strive, we'll stop. Or we'll just, we'll also stop at a point of just the mechanical chanting and just do it every day, but with very little benefit compared to what we're supposed to be getting from the chanting of Hare Krishna. You can honestly ask yourself, or in a confidential exchange with somebody else, what does the chanting actually mean to you? Is it just actually something that you do that doesn't have any meaning? Or is it actually becoming a very important thing? And then similarly, the coming to a meeting, coming to meet Krishna in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna is a person, and he's the most attractive person. He's the most important person in our life. He's the one who's going to take us out of birth and death by our personal relationship with him. So we have to get to know him, and we want to keep hearing about what is Krishna doing? What is Krishna saying? I want to hear more from my best friend, my protector, my beloved, worshipable personality of Godhead. What's he saying? What does he want me to do? And I want to hear about his greatness. I don't want to forget. So that you can do anytime, you can tune in to Krishna by these the darshan of the books. So it's certainly possible with the Grihastha life. It could even be that because of these other burdens, if one is actually Krishna conscious, but he has to take on these other burdens, then, and he doesn't have that much time compared to maybe that he had before when he was just a brahmachari or student in a temple or the ashram. But when he does read, it really is meaningful for him. He's really taking shelter, and he's really trying to develop a personal relationship with Krishna. It doesn't have to be that because there's less time, there's less intensity. It can be just the opposite. But now he really values it, and certainly doesn't miss it. It's his life and soul. And that's a good attitude for a Grihastha who has to do other things, but that having to do other things, that's like a false plea. That because I have to do these other things, what do you expect of me? How do you expect me to have an attachment to Krishna or the holy name? I'm not a monk that I am in the temple all day, but rather all the strain should produce attachment. And Krishna says that to Arjuna, and Prabhupada says that Krishna doesn't give us something impractical. He doesn't tell Arjuna to give up his duties. Oh, and then Prabhupada says, because unless you can think of Krishna during the struggle for your existence, then how will you be able to think of him when you're struggling at the very end and losing that struggle for keeping life in the body? So according to that explanation, it's a kind of training to be attached to Krishna even when you're potentially disturbed, and to understand, I have to turn to Krishna, I have to think of Krishna, and you will do so. It's really a matter of training the mind to be able to do it. And at least we should be aware of it and should be trying it, trying to improve in it every day. And much of our dealing with our wife and family or with our friends should have something to do with this. Like there's that example in the Ramayana, Prabhupada quotes, when the Brahmin Vishwamitra went to see the king, he said, Adhistam yatsat punar janma jayaya. The king asked, how are you doing in your attempt to become free of birth and death? And Prabhupada said that was the friendly kind of thing that a king would say to a saintly person, the equivalent of what you would say to a businessman, how's it going with your business, or to the farmer, how are you doing with your crops, how's it going? So to the saintly person, his work is to develop a love of Krishna. So we are devotees, we're servants of Vaishnavas, no matter what our ashram or job is. So that should be our friendly association should be, how you're doing with your rounds, how you're doing with your reading. Not that it's taken in a challenging way. Why are you asking me? I think I'm not doing it. What kind of a question is that? The king didn't say, the Vishwamitra didn't say, I'm liberated. Why are you asking me that? One may feel like that. He thinks this person is intruding. But we shouldn't be intruding. We should be asking it in a genuine way as a friend. And he shouldn't take it that way. And then we can honestly say, I'm really having problems. Since I'm doing this such and such marathon or doing this work, I haven't been able to do it. Oh, well, why don't we talk about it? Maybe I can help. So like that. And between husband and wife also. They're supposed to help each other, to take vows, to serve each other. And so this is one of the main things. Help each other chant and hear, and you can do it together. And that's the whole purpose of being together. So, maybe some other questions have come up from this so far. Yeah.
Any point that it's very, very important that you have to understand this, that, you know, we have to realize the importance of being with Krishna all the time. Because, like, in one sense, we're like spiritual children, and Krishna consciousness is a medicine. And it's not always easy. But if you leave children to take medicine, they won't do it unless they understand it. So it's very difficult to grasp that.
Well, like with the children, they don't understand it, but then the parents administer it to them. So at least we have enough sense to have approached authorities, spiritual masters, previous acharyas. It's a little different than children. They were just born into that family. But we come forward to be born spiritually. So it's still, although we brought about our own spiritual birth, but if still we're so spiritually immature that we don't take the medicine, then we have to let it be administered to us. That is Vaidhi Bhakti, on the order of the Guru. We do it. By his order, he rings the bell and we wake up. He says, get up, it's time to use this human form of life, get out of ignorance, get off the lap of the witch Maya. So by his calling and waking them, we get up. So we don't, as you say, understand fully the importance of it. So that would be the substitute or the preliminary stage to our own realization of the importance, is to accept guidance. All right, I'll do it. You say it's important, I believe it. Earlier verse, Narada says, all the rules and regulations apply equally to the householder and the sannyasi, the member of the renounced order. The Grihastha, however, is given permission by the spiritual master to indulge in sex during the period favorable for procreation. So that's, except for that exception that's mentioned, they're supposed to be exactly the same still under the order of the spiritual master. And even the thing that the Grihastha made these vows at a time of initiation, didn't say you didn't think then, or you didn't vow that I will chant 16 rounds and follow these four rules as long as I'm in the temple. Of course, not when I get married. No such clause. So yeah, we may think like that, but that's a symptom of a falsity that, just like other things that will develop. So that's in Maya. And the freedom from being in a temple where everyone has to get up or else there'll be some kind of punishment or something. The freedom from that can be used nicely to do it in a more adult way, to do it in your own time, and that shouldn't be abused, to just drop it completely. And if it happens, then you just have to seek help from other householders or whatever, other friends, or spiritual master, how to take care of these adult responsibilities and not abuse them. The other morning, Viruka was saying in the class that in the temple life, it seems like we're carried along through the program, but you don't have to do it on your own initiative. Of course, if you're just carried along, you may not be taking part in very deeply, sitting in a class, in a hall with many others, and you don't listen to the class, things like that. But yes, still, there's some benefit that you do get carried along. But now, if I'm living apart from that, I have to be carried along in the stream of bhakti also by following the bhakti of the great souls. As mentioned, that Narada Muni, his devotional service is like a stream, or like a Ganges that goes to the ocean unobstructed. In Prabhupada comments, even if one observes this stream, he gets carried along. So we have to stay close to the examples of the Mahajans by regularly hearing about them. Otherwise, you become a Greek lady.
Because of the amount of skills that your body is, it's very easy to manage the material thing, like a business relationship, and I did a housework.
Yeah, it's a complex relationship because it's somewhat spiritual and somewhat material. You have to take the spiritual, at least see that there is something spiritual, because sometimes a sincere devotee householder, he gets kind of puzzled and says, well, am I going in the spiritual world? Is this person going to be my wife or husband? And we don't say definitely like some religions that give that assurance that you get married and then in heaven that's your wife. And you don't even grow older, just that God is there. The way in his essay, Rabindra Swarup said he's flying from backyard to backyard in some ideal suburbs. Sometimes being with one family or another while they're having the barbecue. But in other words, their base is still their sense gratification, family life, but God, forever we do it. But we understand that we may meet our spouse in the spiritual world and if we meet at the destination according to our individual spiritual strength. But the main thing is to, in this life, to help each other to that point, to true renunciation and devotion to Krishna. And so in that sense, not that it has to be based on that, if we don't meet in the spiritual world, it's not spiritual. No, it is spiritual. And Prabhupada says we will all meet in some way or another. We'll have some kind of relationship. Maybe the husband and wife will both be cowherd boys or something. We don't know. But that we don't have to know. But to make it spiritual in this life instead of just a business deal, so take out this, be expert like the swan and take the milk out of the milk and water. See the spiritual. That we're together to be spiritual partners to help each other, and as in these ways I've mentioned. You mentioned just the material point of view. Why not things that I've mentioned? That here's a person who cares about my sadhana, my spiritual life, and is helping me to do it, protecting me from illicit desires, and helping me to chant and hear. And I'm helping him to do that, and to serve. We're serving Krishna together. But it is spiritual, and it is material also. Because we see the material, we shouldn't be so naive or neophyte that makes us think, oh, there's something material here. Therefore, this marriage is Maya. I wanted a spiritual relationship. But it's spiritual, and it's got the other aspect, and it can all be used in Krishna's service. And we should keep trying to do that, keep trying to transfer all the material aspects of the relationship into spiritual more and more, like by conversion. Can be like Lakshmi and the goddess of fortune. So that means it can be spiritual entirely. One may take a look at one's individual marriage relationship and think, this is pretty material. Well, then work on it to make it pretty spiritual. It's not innately very material. But if you work at it, it can be spiritual. If you don't, it'll be material.
Hey, Rajesh, to start the first purport, I think you read this, it was saying how, well, it was making some heavy comments about householders and how they're completely in ignorance and all that. And then it kind of understood that it kind of meant non-devotee householders. So in one sense, well, we think that doesn't apply to me. And you were saying the other day as well about the Prabhupada saying that electorate is, of course, this doesn't apply to devotees. And in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's lots of references, in the third chapter where references to, you know, you must look after your parents, for instance, you know, if they're ill or sick or whatever like that, and then you tend to think, oh, but that isn't my only obligation to Krishna because I'm a devotee. And I was just wondering, like, what the relationship between, you know, what we can consider, because Prabhupada used the terms like, if one's practicing full Krishna consciousness or pure devotee as well, then again, he doesn't always use that, he doesn't always use a devotee. And in connection to the Rupa thing about being carried along when you're in the temple, it seems that a lot of it is carried along. And you make, Prabhupada's system was to take initiation after a year of practicing the four rules and chanting 16 rounds. But it seems that although one may have the realization that, yes, this Krishna consciousness is where it's at, and this is what I must do to with my life the rest of the way to time, they have that realization. They may not necessarily have the realization that I'm actually going to be able to maintain this for the rest of my life, and I may have problems in my life. So it seems that whole thing is kind of linked, and there's a tendency to take things very cheaply, or that, you know, these things don't apply to me, and I've already done a certain thing, but it seems that they cause more, sometimes, a lot of trouble in maybe.
On the other hand, if we emphasize that we too are completely in Maya, like, or that we're also demons. Whenever demons are mentioned, that's also us, if we admit it. That might not be truthful either, and it may also be quite discouraging to think that we, just by initiation, got some entrance into transcendental life, but that we're just beginners with a lot of anarchists. So I think part of our faith is that something does happen at initiation that is a very that quantitative leap ahead. And if we just faithfully keep the vows of initiation, then even though we manifest different material symptoms, we're not pure devotees, but we're not still getting karma, and we're not the same as the heaviest things said about people who don't chant Hare Krishna. Like Yamaraj says, don't touch the devotees, but you can go to those people who never chant Hare Krishna, you know, who do this and that, or people who eat cows. So we shouldn't be puffed up, but we get some satisfaction that, by Prabhupada's grace, I'm not in that category anymore, but I could become like that again. I have to be very sorry that I was like that. And now, in this way, there are many ways that we reflect we're different. But I think your question is good, and there is such an attitude, unfortunately, that we develop that we are like completely transcendental and heavy things. Yeah, heavy things which imply a lot of improvement that has to be done, a lot of surrender that has to be done. It doesn't apply to us. We are better than other people. All these things are not good Krishna conscious attitudes. So when it says, by hearing regularly, one should gradually become detached from affection for his wife and children, like a man awakening from a dream. Sure, a devotee can take that for himself. He can become too attached if he's not fully Krishna conscious. I've been trying to encourage devotees in these classes that the grihastha is not an inferior situation from which you can't make advancement. Maybe I overlooked a few places where grihasthas are criticized, but I think the encouragement is not a false thing. And basically, there is that distinction that if you're sincerely prosecuting Krishna consciousness, then the heaviest things that are said about demons and materialists will not apply to you. But the things about practicing Krishna consciousness, they have to be done. Or else we can slip back again. That's a tricky kind of thing in general, to read about the different stages of advancement, and then if you're immediately trying to think, where do I fit in? Perhaps we can't always expect to do that, but just read in a very open, submissive way, and in one sense, think of ourselves as very fallen and liable to have any of the bad qualities mentioned. That's not... Devotees sometimes do that. They'll hear the descriptions of the demons in the 16th chapter, that they're harsh, that they're dirty and things, and then admit to themselves, well, I've got some of these traits. But in general, think that the bad traits we want to avoid and the good traits we want to aspire to, without exactly trying to put ourselves at what stage we're in. But it's I can't really say. I don't know if that's answered your those questions and comments.
Yeah. I just think there's been one thing, for instance, I was talking about a devotee about this recently, about something like, say you were the only child of a family, and one of your parents was dead, one of them was alive, and they went to Sina or something like that, and they had absolutely no other person in the world except this son or daughter who happens to be a devotee. Is it that a devotee would take the view that, well, this just doesn't apply to me, I don't have to, my only obligation is to my spiritual master, Krishna?
Well, that's made it quite extreme case, but yeah, I suppose it would have an obligation. Well, that's like, and there's so many instructions for Varnashram. Well, we were talking about that the other day in one of the classes about that. Oh, like Uddhava was saying, we tend to think that the chapters on karma yoga don't apply to us. We were coming to see that Actually, we do have to learn about this, how to work and offer your work to Krishna, how not to try to behave as an immature renunciate. So instructions for beginners do apply to us. We're admitting that. But those other things apply to us definitely too. That if you surrender to Mukunda, then you don't have other obligations. But in some cases, we have to do that obligation and still practice Krishna consciousness. So he meant that devotee might have to take care of his parents, but that wouldn't be an excuse not to, or to eat meat or to some of the materials. And it would be a great strain for that person. He had to discharge it, and then when it was actually discharged, then he could obligation and still practice Krishna consciousness. So he meant that devotee might have to take care of his parents, but that wouldn't be an excuse not to, or to eat meat or to some of the materials. And it would be a great strain for that person. He had to discharge it, and then he meant that devotee might have to take care of his parents, but that wouldn't be an excuse not to, or to eat meat or to some of the materials. And it would be a great strain for that person. He had to discharge it, and then when it was actually discharged, then he could obligation and still practice Krishna consciousness. So he meant that devotee might have to take care of his parents, but that wouldn't be an excuse not to, or to eat meat or to some of the materials. That would be a great strain for that person. He had to discharge it, and then when it was actually discharged, then he could Raghunath Bhatta, he stayed at home taking care of his parents, and then they died, and then he came and joined Lord Chaitanya.
Yeah, I could just remember that when we were having this discussion, we were making the point that sometimes you may have some spare time, and you may spend it maybe with some peers, but because they're peers, there's a tendency that, you know, it's kind of, let's say, you spend it in pajamas or whatever, and it's not very constructive. But then we were thinking that if you're in that situation, say that very thing happened to you, and your parents were the meat eater, and then you felt like you had to be your advisor to look after them, then you would actually engage them in some sort of treating activity, because you would say, well, I'm looking after them, there's no way they're going to eat meat. And the whole thing, because it's kind of a responsible thing, you would actually...
austerity, a purifying austerity.
Yeah, and you would also be introducing different aspects of Krishna consciousness to their life.
And yeah, well, that's what makes it right. Even if it was a little indirect, still, you keep your identity as a devotee, and then what devotee couldn't criticize that activity, even though it involves some parental attachment or parental responsibility. But sometimes, aside from that example, materialistic parents and non-devotee parents will be very demanding as to